much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really glad you tuned in, and a very happy Monday to you. Well, here's kind of a different question for you. Have you ever been a part of something or noticed something that others assured you was God-breathed and God-driven, but, you know, you had your own concerns about it, and you wondered, is it me or am I seeing this wrong? Or maybe you were part of a ministry initiative where you were driving way too hard, and family members are saying, this is too much, it's costing us, but you didn't want to see it. You know, I've been there before, I think, on both sides of that equation, and I've been very honest about, I don't say 15, 20 years ago, my hubby and I walked through a very low point in our marriage. My dear sweet husband was working full-time and then serving significant hours at church on top of it. So he had about a 75-hour work week every week for over 2 years. It was killing us, and we hit the bottom of the barrel in our marriage. In fact, one of my books came out of that time, Alone in Marriage, and I bless him for letting us tell that part of the story, because we had to actually build and rebuild our marriage from the ground up. And this is why we're talking about this today. I read a novel that I literally could not put down. I think I read it in a day and a half, by a woman named Michelle Phoenix. The title of her book is Of Stillness and Storm, where she addresses this issue of casualties in ministry. And we'll get to that in just a moment. But, you know, Jesus said that things are proven right by their fruit. And another way of thinking of this is God's will for you in one area won't contradict his will for you in another area of your life. His direction in our life will harmonize with all aspects of our life, and it will bear fruit. Well, as I said, I couldn't put this novel down, and we're going to get Michelle Phoenix on in just a bit. We've got three copies of this amazing, so beautifully written novel. We'll get her on in a minute. In fact, we might even open up the phone lines, but I want to just put a caveat here. I'm thinking about this. I'm pretty sure we're going to do this after I give Michelle some time to unpack her novel a bit. But I want to hear from you. Either have you been in a situation where you guys had to make tough choices ministry-wise to guard and protect your family, or you felt like a casualty of ministry because a spouse or a parent just drove and drove so hard that you felt like you were lost in the shuffle? My caveat and my caution here is I don't want names. I don't want names of churches. I really rather every call be anonymous, because I want to guard and protect names, because these things are just delicate. But I want to just know your story, good or bad. How did it go for you? What did you learn? What are you still dealing with as a result? So hang with me. I'm pretty sure I'm going to open the phone lines for that. A couple quick announcements before we get Michelle on. One is we've got a writer's conference coming up in a few months, July 15th. Would love for you to join us. If you have a dream of writing, of being published either as a fiction or nonfiction writer, or to write articles, if you've got a dream, I want you to come and join us. Liz Curtis Higgs will be our keynote. I've said this over and over again, but an A-list faculty of editors, agents, and experts in the field. We cannot wait to meet you. We've got a whole webpage designated to this conference, NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com. We've got already well over 400 registered, but it won't be a complete conference until you're there. So I hope you'll join us. Also, just want to say shout out to those listening to any of our new markets. If you're listening in from Hartford, West Hartford, 94.1 FM or 1290 AM in Hartford, or 93.1 FM in Waterloo, 104.7 in Madison, and 90.7 FM in the Twin Cities. If you're new to the Faith Radio family, listening in one of those markets or streaming online, would you let me know? Email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. And if you include your mailing address, we'll be drawing a few names and sending some fun books off of our Faith Radio shelf as our way of saying thanks for listening. All right, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get her on the show. Raised in France by a Canadian father and American mother, Michelle Phoenix is a mentor, writer, speaker with a heart for missionary kids, MKs you may know them as. She taught for 20 years at Black Forest Academy in Germany before launching her own ministry, advocating for third culture kids. She now travels globally to consult and teach on topics related to this unique people group. Michelle, such an honor to meet you, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Susie. It's an honor to be on with you.
Well, we love to start our conversations every day, Michelle, talking scripture, just as a springboard to the conversation. And you chose 1 Timothy 5:8. But those who won't care for their relatives, especially those in their own household, have denied the true faith. Such people are worse than unbelievers. Boy, you rarely hear a message spoke on this passage, a sermon. I mean, talk to us about this passage.
And yet it's pretty firmly stated, isn't it?
That's
one of those passages that just hit you between the eyes. I think the reason that I wanted to begin with that passage is that it counteracts some of the passages that are used to support contrary ways of viewing family and responsibility. I'm thinking in terms of Abraham and Isaac, right, where God asks Abraham to sacrifice his son to prove how much he loved him. Another passage is maybe Luke 14:26, where it says that anybody who does not hate his mother and father, you know that passage, right, cannot be my disciple. And so I've seen those passages used too often to excuse what looks an awful lot like neglect. And I wanted to start with this passage that says, but if you neglect in that way, then you are worse than unbelievers. So finding that balance between being able to prove our love for God and then acknowledging that he doesn't actually invite us to go through with it. He didn't have Abraham kill his son. And I don't think he wants his followers to hate their parents and children, but he wants us to love him enough that we'd be willing to do so.
Why do you suppose Jesus said it that way when there's seems like a thousand other ways you could say it and not be so misunderstood?
Yeah, you know, I wish I knew, and I wish I was enough of a biblical scholar to know if something in the translation maybe is misleading, depending on what the original wording was. A lot of these things are above my pay grade, so I actually write out of experience and what I've noticed, what I've lived myself, and then I try to find balance in the scriptures. When something just seems so at its face, so harmful, there's got to be another scripture that reels that in and finds balance.
So that's what
I try to do in my own life.
Good word. So, Michelle, we'd love to just start by giving some backstory of your growing up years and what your faith journey and growing up years were like for you.
Oh, that's a big question. I'm a missionary's kid. We go by the term MK. And if you ask any of us, so where are you from? You're opening a huge topic that's very difficult for us to address. So I'll give you the bullet points, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
You did mention I was born in a multicultural family, as multicultural as Canada and the U.S. can be. My dad was Canadian. My mom was American, met at Moody, became missionaries. They were in France for, I believe, 40 full years in music ministry. And France is known to have this illustrious musical background and history, but when they got to France in the 60s, there was actually no program for church music in France. So they were pioneers in that area of ministry. And I was born in Strasbourg, and then my parents started teaching at a place called the European Bible Institute. And it was, woe is me, it was housed in a castle on the outskirts of Paris. So I got to grow up in a castle, and it actually featured in the second novel that I had published with Tyndale. And then I went, you know, I grew up, I went to French schools until I was in ninth grade, and my growing up years were not all good. There was the beauty of being in France. There was the beauty of speaking two languages without ever having had to stop and learn the second language. And there was this community of believers and missionaries that I loved. And then the flip side was growing up in a school system that was abusive in many ways and kind of experiencing what happens, the underbelly of missions, you know, when you're a child observing, seeing the lack of healthy relationships sometimes, the way that people might overdo and overtax themselves to the detriment of really their own health and the families that they're supposed to be caring for. So in ninth grade, my parents were going through some marital struggles at that point in their own lives. And I went to a boarding school in Germany called the Black Forest Academy when I was, I think, 13 or 14. And it is there that I realized for the first time that there are other kids who might come from different cultural backgrounds than mine, but they are just like me in these key ways. And for the first time in my life, I think, in this boarding school, surrounded by other missionaries' kids, I realized that who I was normal and not fatal, and that there was a place for me in this world, even though it wasn't kind of the normal shape of place that teenagers usually take. Oh. After high school, I went to college in the States, 4 years at Wheaton College. I worked for a year as a screenwriter for a small company that folded shortly after they hired me. And then I moved back to Germany and taught at Black Forest Academy for 20 more years after that.
My goodness. You know, I don't know that I've ever heard a positive story of someone needing to go to boarding school. I mean, whenever I've heard people talk about reference back to when they were sent off to boarding school, it always comes with a very, very deep wound. Interesting that this was a context for you to find that you're not alone, you're not crazy, you're not abnormal. What else came out of your boarding school experience?
It is such a thorny topic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, and this is something that is unique to MKs that I'm discovering more and more, and that is that we are capable of fully embracing the good that has happened in certain situations, and at the same time acknowledging what has been difficult or harmful in those situations. So in my case, for instance, yes, the FA was a place of belonging. For the first time in my life, the sense that there was a place where I was recognized and known in a way that non-missionaries and MKs couldn't know me. At the same time, looking back, and even when I was there as a student, I was able to acknowledge that I'm away from mom and dad. I feel like I have been rejected by them. I know the reasons why I have to be at BFA for, in my case, just for a year, because then my parents moved there and became teachers at Black Forest Academy. But I think that the topic of boarding schools is so broad and so intensely felt that the first thing we need to do is acknowledge that there is good for certain situations and certain MKs in the boarding experience. And then that there is also harm in certain situations and for certain MKs in the boarding situation.
We're going to pause here talking to novelist and speaker advocate Michelle Phoenix. The title of her novel is Of Stillness and Storm. I just think it's brilliantly written, and what an amazing story. It just makes you stop and think about what drives you, why you do the things you do. And is this of God or is this our own ambition? When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Michelle's growing up years, and then we're going to get the storyline of this novel. We've got three copies. If you want in on the drawing, just email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Please remember your mailing address, and we will be back in a minute. Tuning in today, I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to novelist and speaker Michelle Phoenix. She's written a gripping novel titled Of Stillness and Storm. We're going to get into the storyline here in a moment, but really talking about how one family member's choices around ministry could create all kinds of havoc in the family, and why we really need to be paying attention and listening to each other, because God's will for you in ministry is not going to contradict his will for you in family. So I'm going to open the phone lines, but I'm doing this with caution and caveat. I don't want to know church names, pastor names, leader names. I want to know, has there been a time where you had to make a tough choice in favor of your family to bring a little bit more balance to your output in ministry? Or maybe you were a casualty, or you made the choice to drive forward in ministry and others paid a price and you know, cost you. Give us a call, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. I'd prefer that these calls just be anonymous, because I just want to just initiate some conversation around it all. But Michelle, let's talk about the storyline of Stillness and Storm, if we can.
Sure. It's the story of a family that moves to Nepal to minister to those who are the poorest, the most destitute in the country. But the story really begins with the husband, Sam's calling to this people group. And it explores, first of all, how Sam and his wife, Lauren, came to be married, and the journey they took as a married couple and then having a child. And when his calling comes, which is so intense and so clear in his mind, the tension becomes that Lauren doesn't sense the same calling as he does. And what does she do as his wife and as a mother to their, at that time, young son, when her husband's fierceness to get there and to get started on this work that's on his heart seems to be having a negative impact, not only on their marriage, but on the well-being of their little boy, Ryan.
What's so interesting, Michelle, and I loved how you played this out, is, you know, they went to leaders in their church. They sought out wisdom from authorities. And at every single turn, people had caution and questions, and he just deemed them clueless and kept going, trying to go around and go around. So his own wife is saying, too fast, where did this come from? And every conversation he then has with her from there on is to manipulate the answer that he wants. And so even though you've got authority and family members going, caution, slow down, he wouldn't do it. Unpack just that drive and where that's coming from.
And he eventually goes without any oversight, right? Because he can't find a mission or a church to support them in that way. He decides that God has called him, therefore nothing will stand in his way. And I think we've all known people at some point in our lives who will always come back with, but God called me, God told me. in a more humorous way, we've heard of people say, God told me I'm going to marry you. And somehow God didn't tell the other person that she was supposed to marry him as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we diminish God when we think that his speaking to us is enough. And I think that God is so much, I know that God is so much bigger than that. And if he is going to call a husband, if we give him time, if we seek his will, he is capable of calling the wife and the child as well. And sometimes it's just our hurry to find significance by doing a work that nobody else is doing or a work that gives us a sense of accomplishment. Sometimes it's that hurry that stands in the way of eventually everybody being on board. But we just want to get there now because we want, and God said.
Wow. Sometimes it's our hurry to find significance that actually gets us ahead of God's timing. So they get to Nepal, and already, I mean, his wife's going kind of kicking and screaming deep inside. She's trying so hard to submit and defer and question her own heart, but it's not feeling right. But their son actually doesn't want to go either. So pick up the story, if you would, once they get there. So he's just grabbing the horns, and he's going, even though apart from being a part of any kind of ministry. Take it from there.
And the way it ends up looking is that he, the husband, Sam, goes off 3 weeks at a time because it takes so long to get into these remote regions of Nepal where he's working, which leaves Lauren and their son, Ryan, at home in a foreign place, just trying to figure out how to do life in Kathmandu, Nepal, which is not, you know, the Midwest. And I think that what really exacerbates everything is that loneliness. And part of it is Lauren's own choice. She is so initially subconsciously bitter about this that she doesn't reach out, and she kind of rejects those who are trying to draw her out of this home that is not comfortable, where the water isn't drinkable, you know, where the shower is a trickle in a cement tub. And what happens is that resentment and the questioning of God and the questioning of her own husband's wisdom turns into something that hardens her. And I think out of her own desire to survive, out of an instinct to somehow doggy paddle her way on the surface of this very uncomfortable life, she loses track of her son, too. So this woman who, before they left the States, because of her husband's call, who was so tuned in to her son's needs and his emotions and his state of mind, she begins to lose that, too, because she's so absorbed with the business of surviving her own circumstances.
Another thing, Michelle, that was so, I thought, brilliant that you put in there, because I've seen this play out as well, is that here she did have, they could have had access to better amenities. I mean, it still was Nepal, but they could have been among a community of other believers where just was probably a little more physically comfortable. But he had this hyper-spiritual mentality as if somehow it was noble to be on the outskirts and suffer even more, even though he's leaving his family for 3 weeks at a time. I was like so mad at him, I had to forgive him, even though he's fictional. You know, but those things happen where as if that is somehow an offering to God, and it's just not.
Yes. And I think it's another aspect of that pursuit of significance. If you are truly suffering more than other missionaries, then your significance is that much greater, right? Because you are suffering more. And it's great if that were a choice that he had made as a single man to suffer more and feel better about it, but he was making that decision for people who were not involved in the decision process and who had to live with those lacks every day of their lives in this new place.
Another thing, too, we've got probably about 3.5 minutes to our hard break at the bottom, Michelle, so we can maybe pick this up on the other side. But, you know, the son was slowly dying on the vine. And once again, as you're an observer reading the book, you're watching times when he wanted to talk with his dad, but his dad always either didn't have time because he was gone for so long, or he had a little sermonette for him. So he really wasn't hearing him, and thus he was losing him.
And part of that was motivated by the dad's attempts to maintain his image as the exemplary missionary. And the exemplary missionary doesn't want to have a son who has rebellious tendencies or who won't speak to his own mother sometimes, or who doesn't show any kind of enjoyment or satisfaction with the life that his father has chosen for him. So I think that a lot of Sam's shortcomings have to do with him really trying to not only, as I said previously, achieve significance by what he does for God, which is not the point of faith, but also maintaining this image as the modern-day conquering hero missionary who is doing more for the world than others are. And it's that kind of ministry ambition that borders on arrogance that can be really dangerous for families on the field.
Wow. What was it like? I mean, did you get mad at him when you were writing about him?
Oh, he was so hard to write. Yes. And my editor went back and she said, you've got to put something in this man that would make a woman fall for him, as yeah. Lauren did in their youth. And that actually helped me to humanize him again and to go back to the roots of what it is that made him this driven minister out in these remote regions. He was a hard man to write, and yet he kind of represents multiple people that I have known on the field who have some of those traits. Now, granted, they're all exacerbated because they're all in one person in this case. But those are traits that I have come across on the mission field and that have been harmful, not only to their own families, but sometimes to the ministry community at large as well.
Well, I've met people not on the mission field, but in ministry. And at first glance, you see the young woman fall in love with them because, you know, I want to say this carefully, but women will say it's hard to find a man who's passionate about God.
That's right.
He may be a hard
right.
worker. He might not even be that. But it's like to find somebody who can articulate faith matters seems like
yeah.
that's the ultimate of what you want. And I've seen it again
yeah.
and again, Michelle, where a woman's like, I've landed gold. But what they don't realize is there's just self-ambition wrapped under the guise of
right.
ministry and not balance. But it is still propping themselves up to their family's detriment. And so it's coming
right.
from a place that's not of abiding in fullness. It's coming out of emptiness, isn't it?
Right. And if there's only one thing on your checklist for finding a mate, and that is that he loves God, that is absolutely crucial. I am not denying that in any way. But there ought to be other things there, too, things that make that person reliable and loving
teachable.
And able to find balance between life and ministry.
Yeah, and teachable. And, yeah, though
yeah.
you've got a voice back and forth. And,
yeah.
boy, so when we come back, we're going to talk about just sort of where the story picks up, because mm-hmm. she's neglected long enough that something else gets her attention. And, again, this is so true to real life, that when you go long enough where you feel like your relationship's dying on the vine, the enemy can come right in and bring an opportunity that will take you farther than you ever wanted to go. Talking to novelist and speaker Michelle Phoenix. Title of her novel is Of Stillness and Storm. I'm telling you, you won't be able to put it down. I got 3 copies. Email Susie@myfaithradio.com. Include your mailing address. If you've got a question or comment, include it there. Like I said, we'll have the phone lines open for a few minutes. If you've got a story to tell, would love for you to tell it anonymously. If maybe you were on the receiving end of choices made about just driven ministry and they cost you, I want to hear from you. 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. Tuning in today, I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to novelist and speaker Michelle Phoenix. Title of her book is Of Stillness and Storm. And before the break, she explained kind of the beginning of the storyline of this young man who's just ambitious for God. And he marries this gal and he's got this dream and vision, although they have an established life in the States and it seems to be going well, but he's restless, decides that he's going to take his family to Nepal, even though his wife's not on board, his son doesn't want to move, and spiritual leaders are saying, you're moving this too fast, and he refused to submit to any kind of authority. He just dragged his family to Nepal, and then he would leave them for 3 weeks at a time to go into the hills, and while his wife and his son were dying on the vine, and so his wife kind of just settles into kind of a spirit of resentment, and you feel her despair so deeply that you almost can't blame her. But any time that we let resentment and bitterness seep in, it just poisons our souls. So, Michelle, you and I talked before the break that oftentimes when we have novelists on, they're very protective of the story, and you're so willing to unpack the story more than a typical novelist would, for the sake of making the point of how important it is to be balanced in our ministry decisions. So if you wouldn't mind, as much as you feel comfortable, take it from mm-hmm. there. So they get to Nepal. She's getting bitter. The son is slowly dying on the vine. Say as much as you can after that.
Sure. And this is what really makes me sad about this story in particular, but about the anecdotal stories that I've seen as well, living on the mission field for so long. And that is that ministry is a beautiful thing, and it's a worthy thing and an essential, necessary thing. And I, as an MK, wouldn't have given it up for the world either, even though there were some hardships involved with my story. But if we're careful and if we do it right and if we seek God's not only guidance but his healing and his comforting, then it can be a good, healthy, beautiful, necessary thing. In this case, however, because of the poor choices that are made, not only on Sam's part, who rushes headlong into this calling that he's received, but also on Lauren's part, who I don't think she steps up when she should or when she could initially before this ball gets rolling the way it does and before it starts trampling people as it rolls. She gets to a point where there's just nothing in her life that feeds her anymore. She is caught up in just surviving. And at that moment in her life, and I don't think this is really breaking any confidence as far as the plot goes, because it appears within the first couple of chapters, at that point in her life, all of a sudden, as it happens so often, a person that she hasn't spoken to in decades appears on Facebook and finds her. And as a result of that little connection, she starts to remember who she used to be and what used to drive her and what happiness and lighthearted feelings might feel like. And because of that connection with this friend from her past who is an artist now living in New York or just outside of New York, because of that reconnection, all of a sudden this new tension appears in her life of who is she really? Is she this young lady who used to be in love with this boy growing up in small town, I think it's Indiana, or is she this woman mired in the messiness of ministry in Nepal and watching her son slowly drift away from her?
It's so interesting, too, Michelle, how, you know, God made us, you know, for love, to love and to be loved.
Yes.
And yet you can sure see how many people depart from the path because they're desperate to feel known, to be seen, to be loved. And he knew more about her, it seemed, than her own husband did. And so on one hand, you're like waving, going, don't go there. But on the other hand, you see her. She can't wait to get back to her computer just to have some semblance of just a cold water to drink. And I'm not justifying. I'm just saying you sure understand the human condition, don't you?
And I think basic to everything that you've just said is the fact that we were created for relationship with God himself. He created us for relationship with him. And people like Sam and others, this is where it begins to go wrong because they believe, and it's that search for significance, right? They believe that they were created to do good work for God. And when we step away from the relational piece of it, we lose that thing that feeds us and that keeps communicating to us who God is and what his role for us in relationship with him is. If I can just put a little plug out there for a book called With. It's by Sky Jatani.
Oh, we've had him on the show plenty of times. We love that. Yeah, but keep going, please.
Absolutely. I hand that book out like business cards to every MK who crosses my path. I think I have 20 of them in my drawer in my entryway right now because that is where we've gone wrong. We have decided that faith is about proving to God that we are his best workers instead of faith being what we were created for, which is relationship with him, seeking to know him better and deeper every day. And that is where this family goes wrong on every aspect of this family. Sam, Lauren, and poor Ryan, who has been demonstrated a God that is not attractive in any way to him because the God is the taskmaster who has stolen his father and eventually steals his mother as well.
Mm. Well, now, I know you had some really good experiences as an MK missionary kid, but you said you had your share of hardships as well. How did you keep a fresh faith? I mean, how did you come into your own and reconcile and separate the stuff that was religion or striving ambition and not God and what was? And, you know, how did you recover that?
It took a long time. And I've got to say that the majority of MKs I know have thrived as MKs. There have been the occasional hiccups, which are normal when you're growing up between worlds. But the majority of them have absolutely loved every aspect or most aspects of growing up MK. In my case, there were other things that layered themselves on top of it. There was abuse in my life growing up within the missionary community and from outside the missionary community. There was, I mentioned before, my parents' marital issues that added some tension to my growing up years. There was the French educational system, which they kind of base motivation on fear. So there's actual physical pain that happens as part of their disciplinary measures in French schools, at least did in those days. And for the MK, the problem when there is turmoil and trauma, the problem is that we are living out a life that was once again called by God. So if it's not carefully articulated, we will conclude that this must have been God's plan for me. He must have wanted me to be abused at the hands of friends and strangers. He must have wanted me to grow up unnoticed and feeling neglected. And the problem with that, of course, is that it changes the way that we view God, and it certainly alters our ability to look to him for comfort when we end up seeing him as a tormentor in chief. So I spent a majority of my early years, into my early 20s, actually really wrestling with wanting to know God, wanting to experience his comfort, but at the same time really resenting him for what he hadn't stepped in to prevent in my life. And it wasn't until I was about 23 when I had attempted to take my own life when I was a teenager, and then at 23, I had returned to the mission field. I was loving every aspect of my life at Black Forest Academy, teaching MKs, seeing my own past kind of used for this new generation of MKs coming up. And I remember driving home from school one day, and I had this very casual thought that if I just turned my wheel and hit that tree head on, then it would all be over. And I thought that I was joyful, and I thought that I was fulfilled. And as a result of that, a friend of mine, and this is a long story, I'll shorten it for you, a friend of mine got me in to see her counselor one summer when I was home on home assignment. And in a miraculous way, in just 1 hour with this gentleman who I had never met before, I realized that everything that had been done to me or that had happened to me in all of those years growing up on the mission field had not been God's will, that he grieves for his children when they suffer, that he is angry at those who hurt us. And just being able to experience that glimpse of a compassionate Father God began my journey to wellness, and it allowed me to see what is God and what isn't God, and to assign blame really to the humans who caused the harm and not to the one who wanted to protect me and wanted to comfort me after it happened.
Boy, Michelle, I hear again and again that is the catalyst to healing, is to knowing the compassion, the love, and the kindness of God.
Yes.
And discerning that dividing line between man's choices, you know, and God's
right.
love for us that never changes,
right.
but the idea of living in such a fallen world. But when those lines get blurred, it's hard to be
yes.
healed by a God that we don't trust. And
exactly.
boy, what a difference when you come into a certain knowledge and even experience. Well, how did you walk out your faith after that differently?
I think initially I had to acknowledge what I couldn't know. That, for me, was the hardest part, and maybe it's because I was raised in the French school system where you need to analyze and come to almost scientific conclusions about everything. And I had to acknowledge that there were aspects of God and of life in a fallen world that I would never really understand the mechanics of it, how and why this happens. And then I had to disconnect for a while from the image of God the judge and God the austere kind of celestial father figure, and really focus on who Jesus was when he was on earth. And somebody I trusted, I can't even remember who it is now, at some point said, if you want to know who God is, look at his son.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I tried to assign to Jesus some of the thoughts and actions that I had been assigning to God, the more I realized there's no way Jesus would have done this to people when he was on earth. It was tantamount to saying that, well, Jesus could walk down the street and stab somebody and say, now you're going to praise me when you get better because, you know, I need to inflict pain on you so that you can love me and trust me more. It's so counterintuitive. And yet we think that God does that. I am a 3-time cancer survivor, and I still get notes from people who say, well, God wanted you to have cancer so your faith would get deeper and stronger.
Wow.
And essentially, we're assigning that to God all the time by the way we respond to pain in this world.
Hmm.
So reframing who God is and how he feels about my pain was really crucial to finding relationship with him.
My goodness. So how have people responded thus far to the novel since its release?
Oh, you know, there's been a lot of positive response from MKs, from missionaries who see their own healing kind of measured against Sam's mistakes. And then there are people who, there's one particular review, I think it's on Goodreads, that is just awful because they believe that in the Christian world, we should never address the fallenness of missionaries, that we should never address
Whoa.
The bad choices we make. And she really, this one person really believes that I and Thomas Nelson, my publishers, are doing a disservice to the world by talking about things
Wow.
that are hard and not having it all wrapped up in a nice, cute pink bow at the end of the
book. And this is what's wrong with us. I mean, truly, you're the problem for saying there's a problem. There's no way healing can happen unless we have the courage and the integrity to say these things are wrong. Because there are, for every missionary kid that stays the course, I'm sure how many go, depart and say, forget this. And you know they're talking. I mean, so for someone to have the guts to say, you know, excuse me, all is not well, but we can bring some help and healing. I mean, wow, I'm sorry you had to endure that, because that's painful as an author when someone misses you altogether, you know?
Right, but it is so balanced by the adult MKs, many of them in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, who are reaching out to me and saying, finally, thank you for speaking the truth about what can go wrong so that we can prevent the attrition that we've been seeing in small numbers, mind you. Again, the majority of MKs do great, but those who don't, somebody needs to be speaking out for them.
Hmm. I applaud you, and I, again, think the novel was just brilliant. Talking to Michelle Phoenix, you've got three copies of Stillness and Storm, the title of her novel. Email if you want in on the drawing, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Don't forget your mailing address. When we come back, I'll have Michelle just chat about speaking events. So she's speaking about these issues and trying to bring health and balance to this population. So important. We'll be back in a minute. Tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to author and speaker Michelle Phoenix. She's got an amazing novel titled Of Stillness and Storm. We've got three copies. We'd love to get your name in on the drawing. Please remember your mailing address, Susie@myfaithradio.com. This listener, Doreen, writes in and she says, I remember vividly years ago being very involved in ministry at church, married with two young children, feeling overwhelmed. When I was receiving prayer, the picture the Lord gave me was a plate overflowing with too much good food. It was clear I needed to get my plate back to proper proportion of good, healthy food. I needed to cut back from too many ministry commitments. I did cut lots out of ministry opportunities, and that brought better balance, lowered my stress, and provided margin. The novel sounds intriguing and filled with truth. Thanks for putting my name in the drawing. Your name's in, Doreen. So good word, though, because this doesn't just happen on the mission field. I mean, we sacrifice a lot on the altar of ministry. And the reason we're talking about this is it's just good to look at, number one, what's driving us, and can we ask questions of our loved ones around us to say, is this costing you in a way that I'm not seeing? Those conversations need to happen, don't they, Michelle?
They do. And I think at the beginning of this interview, you said something about by their fruits, you'll know if this is good.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the murkiness of all of this is that I think God is faithful to use us in ministry, even if everything in our lives isn't lined up the way it ought to be. So for somebody like Sam in this book, who was seeing change happen and who was literally saving lives sometimes in these Nepali villages off in the hills, he could point back to that and say, but see, God is using me. God is doing good work here. So I think we need to be looking for fruit not only in the accomplishment or the result of the work we're doing, but we also need to be looking within our own relationships and see if there's fruit there as well. And sometimes we can get too fixated on the job and not enough on the people.
Well, again, if we've got something that's driving us that's other than the Holy Spirit, where we've got to prove something or a rushed sense of purpose, so to speak, and we're trying to take our family to say, see, do you see the fruit? And we're not listening to how it's affecting them.
Right.
There's something wrong with that. But if you know, again, we can be very secure in God's calling to sit down and say, how is this affecting you? And trust that God's timing, he can do in a moment what will take us months or years to accomplish, right?
Right. And is he big enough to get the job done and to make our family dynamics healthy? And in that way, to embody who he is to the people watching us, observing us. Not necessarily just to the people that we are bringing his word to or what Sam was doing for those people in the hills. It is the way that we live as families and as a Christian community that also expresses who God is and what he's about.
So, Michelle, you do speak to missionary kids, and you advocate for balance here so that children won't be just lost in the shuffle of ministry. Talk about some of your topics and just how it's received. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that part of your ministry.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love especially speaking to missionary families who are about to go to the field. So that's what we call pre-field orientations for missions or pre-field conferences, because what we know we can have an eye out for and we can prevent, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of these families who are just, they're so excited to be heading out for good reason, to do good work. And sometimes I kind of have to be the cautionary tale, the person saying, this is good. Your children will thank you for the rest of their lives for having introduced them to the rest of the globe in this way. But let's also be careful about these potential pitfalls. And I love being preventative in this approach to missionary or MK care in this case. I do reentry seminars for older MKs who are leaving the field, usually to come back for college or university. And that's really a pivotal place in their lives when maybe more than any other time they realize that they're hidden immigrants, that they might look like they belong back in their passport culture. They might talk the right way and dress the right way, but on the inside, there's an awful lot that feels foreign to them. So helping them to adjust back, first of all, to figure out the benefits and the blessings of having grown up MK, and then to help them to adjust back to a place that is supposed to feel like home to them, but isn't really. And then MK care is such a buzzword right now. All of these missions are developing MK care programs. And for a lot of them, unless you have an MK on that MK care board, you don't realize what it is to actually be a missionary's kid. So I love being invited. Next week, for instance, I'll be at Bridging the Gaps in Vancouver on Saturday for a conference where I'll be able to bring some insight into what it feels like to grow up between worlds as the MK, not necessarily as the missionary parent, in order for everybody in attendance to better understand what their needs are, what their strengths are, what their challenges are, and how best to raise resilient and healthy MKs.
Why, that's good stuff, Michelle. What would you say to the person listening today who's very involved in church ministry? What are some indicators that they may be out of balance, or some indicators that it's actually a healthy commitment?
The health of the family really is pretty crucial. And I always say that even in this book, the character of Ryan, the son, some of what he's going through is just normal teenage stuff. And children are going to go through phases where life is a little bit harder. But if there can be communication between parents and children, if there can be a balance where they're not teetering constantly on the edge of burnout, whether it be relational or work-related burnout, I think also the vulnerability to allow others' perspectives to outline how it is that they're really doing. In other words, to ask the community who's observing them, do you see anything in our lives that needs to be maybe adjusted so that we can be healthier? Because so many times, and Sam demonstrates this in the book, so many times we get so caught up in what we're doing and how we're changing the world for good that we don't see the peripheral things that are happening and that can also have an eternal impact not only on ourselves, but on the people we love.
Boy, so good. So what's your dream and hope for your takeaway for your readers of this particular novel?
I call it a cautionary novel, and that really is my hope. It's that it will point out maybe in advance of these things happening what it is that can be avoided and how families could do things differently than this one did in order to ensure health for all of the members. And it's also something that I hope will bring comfort to MKs, and I know so many of them, who have grown up in an unhealthy, dysfunctional way on the mission field, and to help to align their thinking with who God really is, that he isn't this tyrannical kind of taskmaster that was presented to them as they were suffering from neglect, but that God is something entirely different than that, and that their grief and the shortcomings that they experienced hurt him. And that he is there to comfort them and to support them and to find them and rescue them when human failure makes life so hard for them to bear.
Wow. Michelle, are you working on anything else right now, another novel?
I am. There's one coming out on September 5th that I'm so excited about. It's called The Space Between Words, and it bridges the gap, so to speak, between the attacks in Paris that happened in November 2015 and the Huguenot history of France as well. It's kind of a treasure hunt, a mystery, and it delves into where is God in terror in the world today.
Wow. I can't wait to talk with you about that one. So as we wrap up, I'm wondering if you would pray for that person today who's listening, who's on the receiving end, who feels maybe a casualty of ministry, and really they need a fresh word from the Lord, but they need to know if and when they need to stand up for themselves. But just for that person and their family, would you pray?
Yes. Jesus, I thank you that we see you over and over again in the Bible, in your word, caring for the children and begging them to come to you. And I pray that we adults, in whatever it is, position that we have in the lives of children, that we would embody that we would demonstrate your heart for them, that we would see them and hear them and allow them to know themselves and you better in the process of that. Thank you, Jesus, that your heart is for all of us, that your heart is for the lost, that your heart is for the needy, and that your heart is also for these children whose parents have chosen to follow you in a beautiful way. May we not lose track of them in the shuffle of doing so much for you. And may we all, children and adults alike, focus our attention and our spirits on relationship with you, which is what you created us for. Amen.
Amen. And for the record, Michelle, I think you handled this topic so well with such balance and honor. So my hat is off to you, and I thank you for joining
thank
us today.
You. My pleasure. Thank you so much.
God bless you. Michelle Phoenix, an author of the novel of Stillness and Storm, would love for you to email if you want in on the drawing, Susie at myfaithradio.com.
On the mountains, dreams get broken. In you I hope again. No matter what, I know I'm safe inside your hand. On the mountains I will bow my life to the one who set me there. In the valley I will lift my eyes to the one who sees me there. When I'm standing
an interesting conversation. I'm so glad you tuned in. Thanks for listening. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. In just a bit, we're talking to our friend Shanti Feldhahn. The title of her book is The Kindness Challenge, 30 Days to Improve Any Relationship. So we've got another great hour up ahead. Hope you can stay tuned. Don't go away. Hour 2 is up next.